A military plane bringing much-needed medical expertise to an area in desperate need. The destination is not overseas. It is right here in Ontario. The arrival of the so-called Newfoundland 9, the first in a series of reinforcements. Good evening. Their mission, to help a healthcare system on the brink amid this third wave of COVID-19.
Their work is being welcomed, but many experts say it's those in charge who also have the power to protect the most vulnerable. We begin our coverage with CTV's Queen's Park Bureau Chief Colin DeMello. Colin.
And paid sick days, Zarada, has become a contentious issue in this province. The Ford government has repeatedly rejected a province-wide solution. Today, they signaled, though, that no new provincial legislation would be implemented to make it mandatory in this province. This as the province welcomes healthcare workers from other provinces to help us deal with our third wave. A small but determined team of healthcare workers coming to Ontario's rescue.
They've cried out for help. If I can go and relieve somebody up there of their, give them some reprieve, then I'm happy to do that.
A military aircraft touched down in Toronto today, bringing with it 9 healthcare workers from Newfoundland to help relieve the pressure on Ontario's ICUs. In the days to come, they'll be joined by medical teams from the Canadian Armed Forces who have been assessing the need in this province.
As we speak, troops are deploying, and we're going to be able to provide additional support in regards to medical teams and support in any administrative role so we can help the province to fight that fight.
But the demand in Ontario's hospitals won't be satisfied by Canadian help alone. The provincial government made a Canada-wide appeal for 600 healthcare workers. It's slated to receive fewer than 100 people, leading now to a worldwide search.
We have made some requests in the U.S. We are still waiting to hear specifics from them. But we've also looked to other countries such as the Philippines, for example.
As the government trudges through the third wave, it's also rejecting a key recommendation from its scientific advisors. Today, the Progressive Conservatives revealed that instead of a provincial paid sick leave program, it's offering to double the amount of money workers receive through the federal recovery sickness benefit.
We'll pay the full cost of doubling that. That would mean $25 an hour for Ontario workers for 4 weeks.
The move has opened up a new battle between the provincial and federal governments, which insists Ontario should create its own program.
Provinces need to look at the way to deliver sick leave directly through employers, which the federal government can't do.
Premier Doug Ford claimed last week that the province would have the best sick leave program anywhere in North America.
The federal government said today that the Canada Response Sickness Benefit was designed to help people who fall through the cracks of any provincial program. Still, though, the Prime Minister indicated today that Ontario and Ottawa will be working together in the days to come to help fix that program. Reporting live, I'm Colin DeMello. Now back to you.
Thank you, Colin. As the political debate over paid sick leave intensifies, essential workers in virus hotspots are caught in the middle.
For some, it can mean the difference between going to work ill or losing the money for food and rent. CTV's John Woodward has spent the day talking to some in that very position, and he joins us now with more. John.
Michelle, they say going to work can be dangerous and not feeling protected can be heartbreaking. And with variants circulating and more death, they say the issue is as pressing for these employees as it's ever been.
If you call in sick, that's a lot of money that you're losing.
Anna Hodgson is a 69-year-old pensioner who works at a grocery store to make ends meet. She tries to stay safe but understands the cruel choice her coworkers face.
I get upset with people coming into work because they're sick and that they can't get paid for those sick days. That really breaks my heart. It really does.
A lot of money that can mean making rent or not. Doctors saying many of their cases, essential workers or their families who caught COVID at work.
My patient is in her mid-40s. She got COVID-19 from her husband, who got it at the factory that he works at.
In response to a question from CTV News, a Michael Garron Hospital intensive care physician laid out the math.
He has to miss a day of work to get a test, to get a vaccine, or because he feels unwell. He misses out on $133.21, which could be the difference between him meeting rent and missing rent.
Money that's a pittance compared to the cost of an ICU stay, but the reasons go beyond financial.
This is not about the bottom line dollar. This is actually a medical issue.
These are stressful and dangerous times.
Personal support worker Nikki Gergen remembers how COVID-19 swept through her workplace last year. She thinks paid sick leave would have stopped her colleagues from getting sick.
this is happening again, and still we don't have sick days.
Still end up getting COVID and taking it home, passing it on to their families. If one person gets it, that's what's going to happen.
We've been talking about single workplaces, but many of these workers actually work two jobs. And so if they end up going to work, that can be two workplaces that become infected, and the cycle continues. Reporting live from Toronto's East End, I'm John Woodward. Zoraida, back to you.
Thank you, John. The stakes are high in Ontario's health facilities. These are images from the field hospital outside of Sunnybrook this afternoon. Members of the military arriving to assist. CTV Saran Fennell is live outside of Toronto General with more. Saran, that's where the crews from Newfoundland are heading.
That's right, Zoraida. A team of critical care staff arrived just hours ago at the University Health Network. Today, they say they'll get acquainted with their surroundings and their fellow colleagues, and tomorrow they'll hit the ground running. A team of critical care workers from Newfoundland and Labrador arrived in Toronto today.
Energized and excited and ready to help out my colleagues.
To help Ontario fight a third wave.
Ontario hasn't had a break since last March.
From doctors to nurses.
We're ready to get orientated.
This small but mighty team of nine is stepping up.
I will be in a COVID ward in one of the hospitals.
You know, that was our intent for coming up here, to join the teams within the University Health Network in the critical care units and on the COVID floors.
They're coming in to help. But as soon as it's stabilized, they're going home. And that doesn't fix the shortage, doesn't fix the working condition. That's a longer term problem.
The team will be deployed where needed, beginning tomorrow at the University Health Network.
For example, I think about Peel Region, and I think about Brampton as one location. I also think about, you know, the GTA and Scarborough specifically as being very hard hit.
The situation in Ontario is so dire, Sunnybrook is operating a temporary field hospital.
I know it's unsettling to see this at a parking lot at Sunnybrook Hospital or frankly anywhere. Certainly I see it as a very positive thing from the standpoint of creating capacity and helping our system.
With hospitals overwhelmed and understaffed, Dr. Amit Arya says the province needs to focus on COVID prevention.
And the question really comes down to how many lives are they willing to sacrifice?
He says paid sick leave is desperately needed. The province of Ontario is still calling on an additional 500 nurses, and it's not just about hiring them, it's about retaining them as well. The president of the Canadian Federation of Nurses Union tells me nurses worked over 108% increase in overtime in the past year. So lots of overtime and people are tired. Reporting live, I'm Saran Fennell. I'll send it back to you.
Thank you, Saran. The province-wide positivity rate remains high. Roughly 34,000 tests have been processed in the last day, with 10.2% coming back positive. Public Health Ontario is reporting 3,265 new cases in its most recent update. That brings the province's total to more than 452,000 since the start of the pandemic. 29 more deaths are linked to the virus, putting that figure at 7,964, and more than 404,000 cases are now considered resolved. Tonight's regional breakdown looks like this, with 1,044 new cases in the city of Toronto and 673 in Peel Region. York Region has 452 new cases, with 171 in Durham and 138 in Halton. There are 119 new cases in Hamilton and 73 in Niagara Region. It is the first death in Canada from a blood clot possibly linked to the AstraZeneca vaccine. A 54-year-old woman in Quebec has died after receiving a shot of the vaccine.
We were expecting to have those complications with a certain number. It is within the number of person that could be affected. We are in that number. That's very unfortunate and we are sad about it.
Quebec is investigating four cases of serious complications. That is out of about 400,000 people who have received the AstraZeneca shot. The vaccine is being offered to Quebecers between the ages of 45 and 79. The province will not change that, insisting the benefits far outweigh the risks. And this virus is dangerous for those of all ages. The death of a 13-year-old girl in Brampton, proving anyone can be susceptible. Emily Victoria Villegas being remembered by friends, family, and an entire community. CTV's Beth McDonnell is live in Brampton with more. Beth.
Emily Victoria Villegas was a student here in Brampton, a grade 8 student, and her death is highlighting the increasing number of children with COVID in hospital. Emily Victoria Villegas loved the movie Frozen and social media, a regular teenager who tragically died of COVID-19. Flags fly at half mast outside her school, St. John Henry Newman Catholic Elementary in Brampton. The grade 8 student, just 13 years old.
It's been extremely shocking, especially to those of us that are starting to see a lot of sick children. One of my colleagues told me they put a 2-year-old on a ventilator yesterday, somewhere in the GTA.
Emergency room physician Dr. Kashif Prasada says variant cases are unpredictable. He says ICUs in Toronto have kids with pneumonia. He reminds families ERs are open and safe, and there are tools to help guide parents.
Every family should have one of these devices. It's an oxygen saturation monitor. And yeah, check your loved one 3-4 times a day. If the numbers is below 94%, that's a sign that you need to come into the ER.
In Ontario, 3 people under 20 have died of COVID. Doctors continue to emphasize death in patients this young is rare, but more must be done to slow the spread. Villegas' dad worked in a warehouse, the family's sole breadwinner.
We need to immunize essential workers, especially people who are working in congregate settings, and we need to prioritize them for vaccine. And another reason why we need to have sick days for essential workers.
A longtime friend of Villegas' dad started an online fundraiser. It set out to raise $10,000 and has garnered more than $120,000.
It's amazing, you know. But I know for him it's kind of hard because he just wants to be by himself. You know, it's hard times for him, right? Especially that his whole family got COVID.
The sadness of Villegas' death and all children taken by the virus now being felt across Canada and by the Prime Minister.
We are thinking of you. We are grieving with you. And you are not alone.
In a letter to parents, the principal of Villegas' school wrote, "Please continue to keep Emily and her family in your daily thoughts." Dr. Anna Banerjee in the story there said that one thing that will help protect children is vaccinating essential workers and keeping them out of the workplace if they're sick. Reporting live in Brampton, I'm Beth McDonnell. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Beth. On the vaccination front, the lineups prove demand is clear. People waiting before dawn in Pickering for their shot.
In Toronto, focus is shifting toward hotspot neighborhoods. The issue is supply and where it's being allocated. CTV Scott Lightfoot reports.
Another day, another pop-up vaccination clinic in one of the GTA's COVID hotspot areas. This one in Scarborough, where officials hope to vaccinate 1,500 residents of the M1J postal code area both today and tomorrow. Starting next week, areas like this will see an increase in the availability of vaccine supply.
I think it's a really important step to addressing where the majority of cases are happening currently in the city. So if you look at our lowest risk neighborhoods for COVID, they're 50% more likely to be vaccinated than the highest risk neighborhoods. And highest risk neighborhoods have 3 times the rate of COVID.
Despite fewer than expected vaccines arriving in the city this week, the City of Toronto has allocated 59% of the just over 107,000 doses it's expecting to hospitals and mobile and pop-up clinics in hotspot neighborhoods. Next week, the city expects to receive almost 300,000 vaccine doses and will send 73% of those to hotspot neighborhoods.
The key thing here is get those vaccines into the hotspots. You can't ignore the other non-hotspot areas, but you certainly have to prioritize those hotspot areas because it's, you know, these are the people, these are the communities that have been bearing the brunt of the pandemic.
Vaccination clinics in hotspot neighborhoods across the GTA have proven to be incredibly popular. Yesterday, more than 2,000 people showed up to this clinic at Downsview Arena, where only 1,000 doses of the vaccine were available. Ontario's COVID-19 Science Advisory Table has advised the province that 50% of its total vaccine supply should be allocated to hotspot neighborhoods, something the province says it is strongly considering.
I think the science is pretty convincing, as is the moral argument around this. As is the idea of protecting a common resource, which is our hospitals and our intensive care unit capacity. All I can say is the faster that this gets implemented, the better.
The city says the doses not being allocated to hotspot neighborhoods will be used in the city-run mass vaccination clinics. Scott Lightfoot, CTV News.
Meanwhile, Ontario is expanding who can book a shot in hotspot areas. Anyone who will turn 45 this year in one of Ontario's 114 high-risk neighborhoods can book an appointment at a mass immunization clinic. Childcare workers who work in licensed settings will also be eligible to book appointments.
The Ministry of Health says nearly 95,000 doses were administered across the province yesterday, and nearly 4.8 million shots have been given out during the rollout. More than 362,000 people in Ontario are now considered vaccinated, having received both required doses.
Next to the plan to bring vaccines straight to workers.
The first clinic of its kind opening in Peel today with plans for expansion. CTV's Mike Walker reports.
Employees at the Maple Lodge Farms plant in Brampton lining up today for the COVID-19 vaccine. Maria De La Cruz among the first to get the shot this afternoon.
I feel more safe. Oh, I'm so happy to have it.
Starting today, Maple Lodge Farms is hosting workplace vaccination clinics at its three locations in Peel Region for workers required to be at the facilities. It's a partnership with the province and Peel Public Health, the company required to cover the costs.
I mean, imagine having not to line up. Schedule your own workplace giving you the vaccine. That's just awesome.
So management is encouraging, like if you want, you can, it will be good for you. So yeah, we are all excited.
Maple Lodge Farms is the first employer in Peel Region to host pop-up clinics. Maple Leaf Foods will start vaccinating its employees tomorrow, and Amazon will begin next week. Each company has dealt with COVID-19 outbreaks and are in hotspots, requirements the province has set for the workplace clinics.
And gives another alternative for our residents to receive vaccines who are living and working in regional hotspots. And also, too, it provides access for those who are unable to come into our clinic.
Peel Public Health expects to administer 7,000 doses to workers at each company over the next 3 weeks.
We know that the infection rates can be higher, and then transmission in these crowded areas are always quicker. I think with the 20 to 39s being the largest growing group of infections, we really need to start targeting them.
The average age of a warehouse worker in Brampton is 36. And so the current mass vaccination centers doesn't meet their needs.
Brampton's mayor says the clinics are critical, with workplaces being a major contributor to community transmission, adding that other employers are expressing interest in the program.
There's hundreds of factories that have expressed interest, and now it's just about working out the details and the vaccine supply. I spoke to the premier about this last night. He told me that he is determined to make sure they get the vaccine supply.
Back at Maple Lodge Farms, the company says its clinics will be held over the next 2 weeks. About 1,600 Maple Lodge Farms employees are eligible for the vaccine, but the company says about 15% of those employees have said they are not interested in receiving the shot. Also, each company will be offering community pop-up clinics in the near future. Those details are still being finalized. Reporting live in Brampton, I'm Mike Walker. Back to you.
Thank you, Mike. And a reminder, our online team has a full rundown of Ontario's vaccination effort. You can find complete coverage at ctvnewstoronto.ca/vaccines.
We did get some sunshine on this Tuesday, but clouds have really pushed in. An unsettled evening potentially in store. Lindsay Morrison here with the current conditions. Lindsay.
Well, Michelle, I can tell you that it was a spring day today here in Toronto, but it felt more like summer in southwestern Ontario. Take a look at some of the numbers. Winds are climbing to 26 degrees today. It felt more like 30 once you factored in the humidity. 21 degrees in London, a little more seasonal and through eastern sections of Ontario. And it's been cooler lakeside today, once again, thanks to an east wind. Those winds are a little bit breezy right now. We're tracking a few thunderstorms in the eastern part of the province from Belleville extending through Muskoka. We'll talk all about this coming up in your weather forecast. For now, Michelle, I'll send it back to you.
Thanks, Lindsay. Also tonight, the pride flag denied at some schools in Halton Region. The Catholic Board refusing the request and the opportunity to celebrate all students in its system.
In Hamilton, a 34-year-old man is in custody accused of killing his parents following some type of argument.
We spoke to the two daughters of the victims. We managed to track them down last night. They're reaching out to extended family at the moment, and we're just awaiting the okay from them before we put the names out.
Residents of a George Street apartment called 911 yesterday saying a man was stabbing a woman in the 13th floor hallway. Both were found in critical condition soon afterward. A 67-year-old man with serious stab wounds was also discovered in a nearby apartment. He and the 61-year-old woman did not survive. The suspect is under guard in hospital. Police say he will be charged with second-degree murder when he regains consciousness.
Next to a bizarre and deadly sequence of events on a busy GTA highway.
A vehicle crushed by a falling road sign on the QEW, killing the driver. CTV's John Musselman reports.
The devastating incident happened in the Toronto-bound lanes of the QEW near the Burlington Skyway around 1 a.m. Police say a 46-year-old man from Toronto was killed when an overhead highway sign came crashing down on his vehicle. OPP Sergeant Kerry Schmidt says it happened when the boom on a construction excavator hit the sign. It buckled and came crashing down on the victim's vehicle.
The collision itself happened as a result of this excavator. It was not on a trailer at the time. It was actually being driven by an operator.
Officials with the Ministry of Transportation tell CTV News a contractor is doing rehabilitation work to the Skyway Bridge. The area where the excavator was working was closed to highway traffic for the overnight construction work. Three Toronto-bound lanes on the QEW were closed to facilitate the work, with one lane remaining open to allow traffic to keep moving through the construction zone. The lanes where the excavator was traveling were closed to motorists. It appears that the excavator hit the sign as it was moving within those closed lanes. The sign came down onto the remaining lane open to traffic.
Really, the driver had no opportunity to react or respond. It happens in a second. They're traveling at highway speed, and all of a sudden they're presented with a debris and a sign falling right onto the top of their vehicle. Really nothing the driver could have done to avoid this.
The MTO and the contractor are working with the Ministry of Labor and the OPP to try to determine why this happened. The eastbound lanes of the QEW reopened to traffic just before noon. John Musselman, CTV News in Burlington.
Here in this city, an 82-year-old woman is dead after being hit by a dump truck. It happened in the area of Main and Danforth around 3 this afternoon. Police say the woman had been in a wheelchair when she was hit by a truck trying to make a turn. Investigators don't believe speed was a factor, but the investigation is ongoing.
Coming up, the United States issuing new guidelines over when to wear a mask. The update providing a sense of where Canada could be heading while acknowledging there's still a lot of work to be done on this side of the border.
June marks Pride Month around the world, a chance to celebrate diversity and inclusion in all its forms.
But the Pride flag will not fly outside some schools in Halton, the Catholic board deciding against the request. CTV's Sean Leithong is live in Oakville with more. Sean.
Well, that's right, Michelle. When the idea came, the students said they wanted to just have the flag fly here at a school in Oakville. But then that went board-wide with the hope of having a message of inclusiveness to students and staff. The message they got was much different.
The Pride flag will not fly here outside Catholic schools in Halton.
The message that I got is that they're afraid.
Nicole Hotchkiss is a grade 12 student at St. Ignatius of Loyola in Oakville. Earlier this month, she put forward a motion to fly the Pride flag at schools for the month of June and to put safe space posters in every class. Last night, the Halton Catholic District School Board debated and amended the motion, removing the request to fly the flag.
The entire point of my motion and my original delegation was that people can know that Catholic schools support LGBTQ plus students, and they denied us.
Hannah Minty is an alumni who has been pushing for this motion. She was shocked by last night's decision.
With this many people watching this motion and how this is going down, it really is embarrassing to say that I come from the Halton Catholic District School Board.
The decision comes after the Halton chapter of the Ontario English Catholic Teachers Association sent a letter on behalf of their 3,000 members in support of the motion to fly the Pride flag in June. And they added the flag does not just represent the students, it also represents the staff and all members of the HCDSB community. It unites us against hate. The chair of the Catholic School Board says many spoke out against flying the flag.
The reality is we received probably 1,000 emails. There is polarization on this subject.
Patrick Murphy would not say if he's in favor of flying the flag, only that more education is needed.
So we have to make sure that we go through the right steps to make sure we develop a shared understanding of what that flag means within our community.
This issue hasn't just caught local attention. A petition started in favor of flying the Pride flag now has over 17,000 signatures and some big name support.
The petition was signed by Deborah Devine, mother of Dan Levy, asking the school board to fly the flag, and it was sent out by Dan Levy himself through his Instagram.
Nicole Hotchkiss says that it's not fair to see this as a debate between two equal sides.
You basically have your rights debated in front of you, and you're told that it's through a Catholic lens, so you have to sort of view both sides, but one side is telling you that you're not welcome, you're not accepted, that you shouldn't have the right to marry who you want, that your identity doesn't exist.
But she says that this will not end here.
So Hotchkiss says he continues this discussion and is glad that it is reaching so many people so that it can reach wider schools and more school boards. Just for an example, the Halton Public Board will be flying the Pride flag this June. Reporting live, I'm Sean Leithong. I'll send it back inside.
Thank you, Sean. Returning to our virus coverage, a rising number of cases means Nova Scotia will enter a province-wide lockdown tomorrow.
COVID is in every region of our province, and it doesn't seem to want to slow down.
Effective at 8 a.m. local time, all schools and non-essential indoor services will be closed for the next 2 weeks. Nova Scotia had a record 96 new cases today. The military is deploying 60 members to help at COVID-19 testing centers.
The Canadian government is sending $10 million to India, which is being ravaged by a deadly surge of COVID-19. The first international shipment of medical aid arrived in New Delhi today. The delivery from Britain included oxygen concentrators and ventilators. India reported more than 323,000 new infections today. They've had 17.6 million cases since the pandemic began. The Canadian money will go to the Indian Red Cross for PPE and other equipment.
Tens of millions of Americans are unmasking on the advice of the nation's top public health agency.
The U.S. Centers for Disease Control has issued new guidelines for outdoor mask wearing for those who've already been fully vaccinated. CTV's Raheem Ladani joins us now in studio with the details. Raheem.
Well, Zoraida and Michelle, the CDC has laid out a range of activities fully vaccinated Americans can now do without a mask. And while there are exceptions, it's a sign the U.S. is heading in the right direction while Canada lags behind.
After a slow start to America's vaccine rollout, the country has turned a corner.
Beginning today, gathering with a group of friends in a park, going for a picnic, as long as you are vaccinated and outdoors, you can do it without a mask.
The U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention say fully vaccinated Americans no longer need to wear masks outdoors. That includes dining at an outdoor restaurant with people from multiple households.
Less than 10% of documented transmission in many studies have occurred outdoors. We also know that there's almost a 20-fold increased risk of transmission in the indoor setting and the outdoor setting.
The exceptions are places such as sporting events and concerts, where masks are still mandated because physical distancing is a challenge and many unvaccinated people may also be there. The new rules come as 37% of the U.S. population over the age of 18 are fully vaccinated, a stark difference to the reality north of the border.
In the United States, between vaccines as well as those who have had the disease, they're assuming up to 40% herd immunity. That is not our situation in Canada, so clearly it's a different situation.
The situation is also different on the vaccine hesitancy front. While many Canadians are camping out just to get their first shot, more than 5 million Americans may have missed the window to get their second shot. And doctors believe the new guidance could be incentive for them to get fully vaccinated.
Yes, this is part of the move to incentivize people, but we have to do it judiciously because if we pull down a lot of the barriers and restrictions that exist too soon, things can go south, unfortunately, rather quickly.
Cautious optimism as America's fight against the virus gets brighter.
Now, the CDC is advising fully vaccinated people to still wear masks indoor public settings, while none of the recommendations for mask wearing have changed for those who aren't fully vaccinated. Reporting live, I'm Raheem Ladani. Michelle, back to you.
Thank you, Raheem. Still ahead, Netflix expanding its reach here in Toronto. The streaming giant making a major announcement, promising significant implications for our local economy and homegrown productions.
Tonight, Pat Foran coming up on Consumer Alert. Do you ever feel like your smartphone is spying on you? Maybe you Googled to buy a pair of shoes and minutes later got ads sent to you from shoe companies. It's done through digital tracking, and now there's a new way to try and protect your privacy. I'll have my report just ahead.
So today we made it to a high of 13 degrees in the city of Toronto. That's warmer than we got yesterday, but it's still technically on the cool side of seasonal. And we have some winds coming out of the east off of Lake Ontario to thank for keeping GTA communities near the lakeside a little bit cooler. We will, however, tap into some of the warmer air that southwestern Ontario has been enjoying for tomorrow. But with that is going to come a risk of thunderstorms. We're currently tracking thunder and lightning over Muskoka and the Kawartha Lakes. A look at your radar and the rest of your forecast is coming up.
Have you ever Googled to buy clothing or, say, a lawnmower, and then immediately ads popping up on your phone for those exact same items?
It's done through digital tracking. But due to privacy concerns, Apple has just announced a new way to limit the use of your private information. Pat Foran has the story on Consumer Alert. Pat.
Michelle and Zoraida, whenever we do a Google search or buy something online, our private information is being tracked and collected. Apple says its latest update has a new feature to give you a choice. You can allow apps to share your data or say no and keep it private.
You may have wondered how your phone knows so much about you. It's not listening, but it is tracking your moves online.
It knows where I live. It knows where I went grocery shopping.
I went on vacation a few times, and after I got back, ads for those countries came up in my Instagram.
Tech giant Apple says its latest update has a new way to keep your personal information safe. It's a new app tracking transparency prompt.
When you're using apps on your iPhone, you may start to see this.
You'll be asked if you want to give permission to be tracked for advertising purposes.
It's a feature that gives you a choice on how apps use and share your data.
It allows iPhone users to choose what apps like Facebook and Google are allowed to track, be it Google searches, spending habits, browsing history, or cities you visited, things that can be tracked even when you're not using the apps. The data can be sold to advertisers and used to send you targeted ads.
Apple is responding to a real consumer desire for privacy. They're the first of many that are going to make this transition to better protecting privacy.
While users will have more privacy protection, experts say it's a move that could hurt businesses that benefit from targeted ads, and some people may not mind receiving ads for things they're looking for.
For many small businesses, they advertise through these apps. The companies are being provided information about you and what you like. On one hand, you want to prevent people from knowing too much about you, but at the same time, it's kind of nice when you get things that you're interested in.
Facebook has voiced concerns about allowing users to block digital tracking as it helps the company earn billions of dollars in ad revenue each year.
And you can also go into settings on your phone to find ways to protect your privacy. But this new feature is being called a game changer as more people become concerned about how big tech is making money selling their personal information. On your side, I'm Pat Foran.
If you have a consumer story idea, email us at alert@ctv.ca.
Toronto has been chosen to be the first Canadian home for Netflix.
The streaming giant will open its corporate headquarters in this country somewhere downtown.
Our pitch was clear. Toronto is a film-friendly city, which welcomes and celebrates the screen industry in the broadest sense, digital, television, and film. The quality and diversity of our talent pool is second to none anywhere in the world.
Tory says Netflix spends more than $200 million a year on the production of shows in Toronto. The company says by setting up the office, it hopes to bring more Canadian artists and stories to the world. No indication yet as to when the headquarters will be operating or how many jobs will be created.
Rain is on the way. It could also be stormy tonight.
Yeah, but today was beautiful. So I got out today because I know you were forecasting that since the beginning of the week.
Take
so
advantage.
We spent some time outside in the backyard today, Lindsay.
I'm glad you were able to do that because, yes, we have a risk of thunderstorms tonight. We have another opportunity for stormy weather tomorrow. Thursday's forecast has changed a little bit, but generally speaking, it is still unsettled. The weekend brings some improvements, so that's something you can look forward to. Weather is brought to you by Trane for home comfort, cooling, and clean air. It's hard to stop. stop a train. We're going to begin with a little bit of active weather that we currently have in through the eastern part of our province and north toward the Kawartha Lakes and Muskoka. If you are joining us from Huntsville, Ontario, around Bracebridge and over toward the Minden area, you've been dealing with some thunder and lightning the last little while. We have a couple of cells that are marching across the Parry Sound area. It's been unsettled around Port Carling and then in through eastern sections of our province, Havelock, for example, and then over toward Belleville, we have some thunderstorm activity. The activity for tonight is along a warm front, and we have a chance of a few storms here in Toronto as well. Tomorrow, it's the cold front. If we can get enough clearing tomorrow morning, we have a chance of thunderstorms as early as the late morning or the early part of the afternoon. Here's how it plays out. So through the night tonight, it will continue to be unsettled east of Georgian Bay. Into tomorrow, late morning, and again, early afternoon, wouldn't be surprised if we get a couple of rumbles of thunder here in the city of Toronto, but the storms will likely be non-severe in nature. Of course, there is still a chance. Chance of a few showers into late afternoon on Wednesday. Thursday, again, the forecast has changed somewhat, but we're still tracking the possibility of some wet weather. Tonight at a glance, 10 degrees is our overnight low. That's decently mild. Tomorrow, we tap into some of the milder air. We're forecasting a high of around 16 in Toronto, but then it gets cooler, especially as we make our way into Friday. May is what we welcome on Saturday, and that's the day I'm looking forward to. A little bit milder with a mix of sun and cloud. That's your weather for now. Zoraida, I'll send it over to you.
Thank you, Lindsay. Also tonight, keep your alcoholic drinks out of city parks. A proposal to loosen the rules hits a roadblock as residents look to safely enjoy the warmer weather.
An Olympic gold medalist is offering powerful insight into how devastating COVID-19 can be for someone young and fit.
We get the details from our health reporter, Pauline Chan.
The symptoms per person are so unpredictable, and the duration is so unpredictable. Who would bet money on me being sick?
Who indeed would think a 31-year-old who won a gold medal at the Olympics just 3 years ago would be vulnerable to COVID-19? But Alex Kopach was, and he described his illness as a near-death experience.
Getting hit by a car, for example, because then it's just done. You're waiting, and you don't know how much longer you have to wait before it takes you or doesn't.
He became ill almost 2 weeks ago, and last Wednesday was admitted to hospital.
Even an Olympic champion can be crippled by this thing. Don't think you're better than that.
Kopach told CTV News about his hallucinations when he was low on oxygen.
You play out something completely real, and you don't even know if you're actually in your house currently, or are you laying in bed. That's in the peak of the fever. That's in the valleys of the hypoxia. I mean, it's an awful experience.
And he has a message about vaccines. They could save your life.
Oh my God, yes. And if not theirs, then someone else.
Kopach says he still uses oxygen, and if the tube moves when he falls asleep, he can feel himself gasping for air. Pauline Chan, CTV News.
Fans of the Milwaukee Bucks can watch their team play this weekend and get vaccinated at the same time. Anyone 16 and older can receive a first dose when the Bucks host Brooklyn on Sunday. The team has partnered with the health department to set up a mobile vaccination site at the arena. The club is strongly encouraging everyone to take advantage of the opportunity.
Here at home, the Illuminato Festival is being postponed for the first time. The arts-filled celebration is being pushed back to October because of COVID-19 restrictions in Ontario. The 15th anniversary event was originally scheduled for June, but organizers say they want to make sure they can safely deliver a powerful program that shares the artists' collective vision. More details and a new date will be revealed in June.
The Duke and Duchess of Sussex are using their celebrity to help countries in need during the pandemic. Harry and Meghan will serve as campaign chairs for an effort to deliver vaccines to medical workers in the world's poorest countries. It was started by Global Citizen, an anti-poverty nonprofit organization. The couple will also take part in Vax Live, the concert to reunite the world on May 8th.
Stars Tonight is brought to you by Lastman's Bad Boy. Who's better? Nobody.
CTV Tonight. Yep, we're all home. May as well kick back with another night of awesome television. It all starts at 7 tonight, right here on CTV.
219 films from 66 countries. Hot Docs 2021 is almost here. And tomorrow, Director of Programming Shane Smith will preview the festival, which features a record-breaking number of films by women. CP24 Breakfast, where Toronto gets its everything every morning.
they've cried out for help. If I can go and relieve somebody up there of their, give them some reprieve, then I'm happy to do that.
Updating our top stories, 9 healthcare workers from Newfoundland and Labrador arrived in Toronto today. They'll be joined by military medical teams to help out in hospitals.
We were expecting to have those complications with a certain number. It is within the number of person that could be affected.
A 54-year-old woman in Quebec has died after developing a blood clot. She had received a dose of the AstraZeneca vaccine. The province still insists the benefits of the shot outweigh the risks.
Really, the driver had no opportunity to react or respond. It happens in a second. They're traveling at highway speed, and all of a sudden, they're presented with debris.
A 46-year-old Toronto man was killed when an overhead highway sign fell on his vehicle. The boom on a construction excavator hit the sign. It happened early today on the QEW near the Burlington Skyway.
And don't forget to follow us on social media and keep up to date day and night through our website, ctvnewstoronto.ca. And if you have a news tip, photos, or video of breaking news, let us know. Well, it's a start, but medical experts say more is definitely needed.
9 health workers arriving from Newfoundland and Labrador today, and that's the focus of a discussion on CP24 tonight. We're joined by Jackie Crandles. Jackie, you're going to be speaking with a critical care nurse who's part of that very team.
Yeah, that's right, Michelle. Last week, or a couple of weeks ago, in fact, the premier said he was putting out the call to provinces and territories looking for help for the struggling ICUs and hospitals right across the province in this third wave. Well, 9 medical professionals from Newfoundland, they've answered that call tonight. We'll be speaking with one of the nurses to find out why she decided to make the trip to Ontario.
Okay, and Jackie, the political tug of war over paid sick leave continues, and you'll be getting reaction tonight from doctors as well as strategists.
Yeah, the premier just last week said that he was going to help fill the gaps that currently exist with the federal paid sick leave program. Today we got some answers from the labor minister as to exactly what entails in the province's idea of how that's going to work. They'll be doubling the payments under the federal program, but that's about it. So we're going to speak with some medical professionals to find out if that is enough. And we'll also be speaking with political strategists to find out if the government could do better.
Okay, Jackie, looking forward to it. Thank you. And CP24 tonight airs immediately following this newscast on CP24 from 7 to 9.
On the markets, the Canadian dollar lost slightly to 80.65 cents U.S. American benchmark oil was up to close at 62.94 a barrel, and the TSX Composite Index gained slightly to 19,175.
An attempt to allow drinking at Toronto parks and beaches this summer has been quashed. A committee at City Council effectively shot down the proposed pilot project today. It voted unanimously against a plan to permit the consumption of alcohol between 11 in the morning and 9 at night. It's believed the move might encourage people to ignore guidelines on gathering, physical distancing, and masking. Enforcement was also a concern.
Meanwhile, City Councillor Stephen Holliday is calling on the Premier to reopen some outdoor recreation facilities, including golf courses. Courses, you'll remember, opened briefly earlier this month, but were closed again when strict new measures took effect. Holliday says not all sports have the same risks. He says safe opportunities to be active promote physical and mental health.
After the break, a new fundraising campaign offering a tiny glimpse into the reality of frontline work in healthcare.
Tonight, the critical context around Canada's vaccine campaign.
We were expecting to have those complications.
Perspective on the first death tied to AstraZeneca, plus a reminder on what's safe and unsafe after that first dose, later on CTV National News.
Time now for Toronto Together and an upcoming challenge to support frontline workers.
The Give a Shift campaign is the first of its kind for the University Health Network and asks participants to put in some work.
Our healthcare workers have been hard at work and been tested like they never have been before for more than a year now.
The virtual campaign requires spending 12 hours mimicking some of the activities healthcare workers have to go through on a daily basis. That can include washing your hands between every activity and carrying your phone in a Ziploc bag.
Talking about the unique experiences of being a healthcare worker, at a hospital with lots of patients with COVID and you know, what the day-to-day work is like. It is really hard to describe that to, you know, to my mom, to friends, who haven't been able to kind of go in and see it for themselves.
The Give a Shift Challenge runs from April 30th to May 2nd. So those 12 hours, by the way, can be spread over a few days. There is a pre-made time card already available that lists a whole bunch of different challenges. Participants are also free to add their own.
All right, Lindsay, one last look at the forecast, and we can see the active weather already starting to push in behind you.
Yeah, still tracking a little bit of thunder and lightning around places like Bannockburn and pushing north toward Bancroft. It's still quite active in through Muskoka as well. There's quite a bit of precipitation headed toward the central part of our province through the overnight hours tonight. Just want to point out a secondary front that seems to be firing off a little bit of thunder and lightning as well. Just to the north of Waterloo region, we might start to see a few showers develop around Cambridge and then eventually into Milton, and then perhaps for us here in the greater Toronto area too. Tonight's lows are going to remain quite mild in the southwest, decently mild for us in Toronto, a little more seasonal for eastern sections of our province. And then here's another look at our 7-day forecast. Thursday might not be quite as unsettled as it was looking yesterday and even earlier today, but still a chance of showers through Friday. Weekend brings improvements, not only as far as conditions, but also temperatures. Chance of showers early next week. That's the weather. Zoraida and Michelle, over to you.
Thank you, Lindsay. And be sure to join us later tonight for CTV News at 11:30.
You can also stay up to date by going to our website. And a reminder, CP24 Tonight with Jackie Crandles begins momentarily on CP24.
For Lindsay and all of us here at CTV News, have a good night. We'll see you at 11:30.